RVS Studios this afternoon are Patrick Holian and Lee Camacho Rooks. I have to say doctors, Patrick Holian and Lee Camacho Rooks. They both just received their PhD in English here at UL with a concentration in creative writing. It is one of a handful of really fabulous programs in creative writing in the country. And so it's a great honor to have graduated from this program. We're also joined by telephone by a young writer, screenwriter, Zach Godshall. He's in Baton Rouge, and he's joining us by telephone. And you all are all here with us virtually and in our studios because you're all writers, young writers in our community.
Youngish.
Well, from our perspective, you are young writers. You're here today because it's always fascinating to examine who's writing in our community, especially KRVS is located here on the UL campus, and we're very aware of the creative writing program and what's going on. But I think a lot of listeners in our audience are not quite so intimately aware of all of the writing and research that goes on here on the UL campus. And then, Zach, I'm sort of including you in our community, too, because you're from Lafayette. And currently teach in Baton Rouge right now. But you are a screenwriter, and in addition to your films, I think a lot of people do forget that you actually write. You don't just take out your camera and point it at somebody. Is that right?
That's right. You know, sometimes I do that, but, you know, try to think about writing all the time.
So. Yes. So I'm very glad to welcome all of you here as writers, young writers in our community currently, and very different writers. And people will have an opportunity to hear the three of you read together.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about that towards the end of the interview. But I really want to introduce them to you and give people a sense of the depth and variety of writing that does go on here in Lafayette. So let's start off with Lee Camacho Rooks.
Yes.
How long were you in the program here at UL?
4 years.
4 years. And you are already widely published. And that's another great thing about this program is it really does encourage you to make contacts and to be publishing, not just wait until you get that PhD
really
degree.
Does.
So you've been widely published. You are working currently on a complete collection of short stories that will be published. And the title right now is Moon Trees and Other Orphans.
That's right. It's coming out in September 2019 from Black Lawrence Press.
Well, let's talk about your writing. What led you to want a PhD in creative writing? So that's an interesting combination there, because I think there are people who think of writers as lonely people who just kind of sit in a room and write. But you're really quite active, and of course there are many programs where writers can teach because people are eager to learn more about writing. So what led you to this program, and what was your literary path?
I started writing pretty young, but I never really thought of being a writer. That wasn't a job. I didn't know any writers. Didn't seem real. I have a learning disability, disorder of written expression, so all of that seemed... it was a hobby. But as life went on, I found out that it could be more than a hobby. I actually got my undergraduate degree and my master's degree in English and taught at Southeastern Louisiana University for a while. But the more I was teaching comp classes, the less I was writing, which is, I think, pretty normal. And I ended up going for my MFA. And then really fell in love with writing as work as opposed to as hobby. And that's quite a different thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One thing writers need, though, is time. And, you know, I continued to teach. I continued to work while I was getting my MFA and then after. And I had these projects. I had the book of short stories, which wasn't quite done. I had a novel that I had maybe 60 pages on. I also had this desire to really delve deeper into the craft, the philosophy of writing, the critical aspect of how writing functions, how it's put together. And so the PhD, where I would both have more time to write and finish these longer works I was working on, but also that I'd have more time to be a part of a community that was interested in writing in terms of not just what's on the page, but how it functions. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me here. I had met Dr. John McNally, our writer in residence at my MFA. I didn't study under him, but I'd met him. And so when he came here, we talked about the program a lot, and I ended up coming.
He's a very prolific writer.
Oh, my goodness,
he is. And I think has drawn a number of people to the program. So what do you write about?
Oh, goodness. I write about a bunch of different things, but mostly I'm a writer of place, I think, most of all. My connection to South Louisiana is very strong. My connection to the land and the water. I'm a little water baby. I grew up in Miami in South Louisiana. So a lot of what I write is really seeped in place. But I tend to write things that deal with bad people doing bad things that they shouldn't be doing. So I think what they like to call grit lit, crime lit, is most of what I write. But I also write a little bit of science fiction. I write nonfiction. I have a memoir piece coming out soon. And I write a little bit of poetry.
I think just right there, people who are listening can understand that writing is not just a single course.
No.
It's really so varied, you know? I mean, just hearing you talk about all this, I mean, I'm an English major too, but that's it's pretty fascinating. It sounds like it's even, you know, there are more areas that people explore now in writing.
I think that's definitely true. Mm-hmm. Genre used to get a pretty bad rap. And these days, though, it's a lot more accepted. The way has been paved for many years. And so one of the things that I love about this program, especially, was really an acceptance of any kind of writing, cross-genre writing, working in multiple genres, that kind of thing. And being able to push boundaries, take risks. So that's, you know, it can be a lonely thing to sit at home. But I think it's even lonelier if you're just doing one thing all of the time. And so to be able to switch to some days work on my novel and other days write some poems, or sometimes do one in the morning and one in the afternoon, fills my world with a lot of variety.
And as you said, to be part of such an accepting community.
Yes.
And I know Patrick will address that as well. And Zach, we're going to talk a bit about that, you know, pretty amazing a film community that we have here as well. And people are becoming much more accepting. And I'm glad
so.
You made that point, because I've felt that about the university, both the undergraduate and graduate program here. So I think you have something that you brought that you could read.
I did.
Now, how would you describe what this is going to be?
This is a piece of flash fiction. Mm-hmm. It was published in Smoke Long Quarterly online, and it's only 350 words. and it's just a little family piece. Mm-hmm. It is fiction. Her papa's hands tremble as he opens the olives, something she can do but asks for help with anyway. It is the same sort of lid the octopus she is studying in her lab opens to dig for shrimp while she clicks the buttons on her stopwatch. In a race, papa would shake into second, the octopus leaving him far behind, slow to leave the table where he chops the morning's catch, slow to take the jar, slow and fumbling as he turns the lid. Her hand in a loose fist, she presses her thumb against an imaginary button, counts, pushes again, yes, slower. Tomorrow, when she feeds her octopus scraps from his fishing nets, its time will be shorter than the day before. Every day, the octopus gets faster. It is as if every second lost at home is one gained in the lab. Still, Papa's fast enough to have caught them dinner, the pulpo from the first catch of the day. Another octopus, but in his nets, in this house, on his tongue, that still struggles with English, it is always pulpo. She stays at work too long, wants to be back now. Her octopus's spots have grown familiar, like a face. She is not lonely there, at work. She waits for the sound of the pulpo hitting oil, waits for the smell, feels Papa's hand swim across her shoulder as he maneuvers around her. When it comes, the smell is the same as it has always been. Olive oil, garlic, the tart of a lemon cut again, the salt and brine on his clothes, in the curtains, the smell of fish from his nets, her necropsies settled in deep, wood. The house will remember even as he forgets, even as they both forget. She steals an olive from his cutting board, like a second from the stopwatch, and then a slice of pulpo, sizzling, from the pan. He pops her knuckles, wags his father finger with a smile. Wait. Still fast enough for that, too.
That was Lee Camacho Rooks, and she is a part of a great little group here of young writers that we have in our studios, along with Patrick Holian and Zach Godshall by telephone today. They will be reading together next week, and we wanted to have them on to talk a bit about their work, especially Lee and Patrick just graduated from UL Lafayette. They are doctors now. Dr. Rooks and Dr. Holian graduated in the English program with a concentration in creative writing, so congratulations on that. That's wonderful. Lee is talking about a community of writers that is so important for the formation of a writer. Have you felt that here at UL, Patrick? Has that been an important part of getting your PhD in creative writing here?
Yeah, I think it's been vital in my transformation and in my growth. And I would I'd echo many of Lee's points, but also add that one of the most attractive aspects of UL's program for me was that it was a generalist program. And I didn't study English in my bachelor's and master's program. I studied creative writing in both. So I very much felt as though I was at a disadvantage. And mm-hmm. I felt as though I needed that academic rigor. Mm-hmm. And I felt as though I had a great deal to learn, whether it came to literary studies, literary theory. And I had the very pleasant surprise of learning a lot about folklore as well in this program. There's a great folklore concentration at UL. So I think just all of the great minds in the English department, they're so kind of distinct, and people are working on such exciting projects. I think you can't help but want mm-hmm. to immerse yourself and really learn and listen to people.
Well, I'm glad you're making that point about what it takes to be a writer. I mean, obviously, there are some people who do nothing but sit in a room and produce. But I noticed in your notes that you sent me, you quoted Samuel Johnson about how important reading is and outside influences, how many it takes to produce one book.
Right.
And I think that's what you're talking about, that you became aware of just how important it is to have experiences and read and be exposed to scholars who are here at UL.
Certainly. And I think my route was a little more circuitous. I read a lot when I was a kid. My mom, we would have reading hours, and I read a lot of genre. I read a lot of horror novels as a little kid, and I remember being struck immediately by how visceral the sense, the kind of the feeling that was imparted by these books. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd stay up all night reading these, and I was 8, 9 years old. And I kind of drifted away, and I came back to it in college when I was 20 and just kind of wandering around and as a 20-year-old kid, mm-hmm. not sure what I wanted to do. And I ended up declaring a creative writing major, and from there took a few years off after I got my bachelor's and got my MFA at St. Mary's College of California. And after that, I did a variety of things. I was parking cars. I worked for Yelp.
All
for a couple
fodder
years.
For writing, isn't it?
yeah. I was a consultant for a data management litigation firm.
So how do you aggregate all of those experiences into your writing? What do you write about?
I struggle to answer that. I think I write a lot about dislocation and absence and family, and not just family by blood, but the families that we choose in life, and just kind of the presence of absence in our lives. In the little passage I sent you, I talked about W.G. Zebald, and he talked about ghosts and hauntings and how the ghosts are always, how the dead are always with us. And I think I'm really fascinated by the fact that we carry places, times, moments mm-hmm. with us all the time, consciously and unconsciously. And sometimes those moments rise to the surface and we're made more aware of them. But those are things that draw me in, as well as liminal spaces, those kind of quotidian moments that seem to slip by but really construct so much of our lives. I think it's important to call them out in art, whether it's writing or music or
film.
Film, yeah.
We got you over there, Zach. And you explore that likely in a variety of genres. You write fiction. You also write poetry. You've done short stories and novella.
Yeah.
So it feels like young writers are exploring different genres, that they're not just sticking to one. It's like it's not big enough to explore all these different ideas and types of literature.
I think I'd echo Lee's point in terms of the way that these different modes feed into one another. Mm-hmm. And I'd echo that with scholarship as well. Mm-hmm. I just emphasize the importance of reading and reading everything.
Yeah.
Reading everything you get your hands on, mm-hmm. and not making or passing judgment, just being open, I guess. Present.
I think our audience can see how very well formed the two of you are and how effective this program has been. Again, if you are just tuning in, my guests are Lee Camacho Rooks, Patrick Holian, both who just received their doctorates here at UL Lafayette in creative writing, and by telephone, Zach Gottschall, a filmmaker, screenwriter. The three of them will be reading together next week on Tuesday at Alexander Books, and they are part of just a very vibrant community of writers in Louisiana. I think for a long time, you could just look at a handful of writers in Louisiana, really. Mm-hmm. I think I remember as an undergraduate here, I would just really be very envious of other states that seem to have more writers. And I think that's changed so much, in large part because of this program here, and it's built over the generations. So it's a delight to have you all here in our studios illustrating that as well. So, Patrick, I think you brought a little piece that you could read. What is this from?
This is a poem. Mm-hmm. I do write a great deal of poetry, or I try to. I mean, this is called A Brief History of Pastoral Counseling. I'm sorry for my throat. I got some allergies cooking.
You sound fine.
There's no body that is not a sermon. Fat dogs, obsidian, curvy Mexican women, trails nestled behind waterfalls, all good things. Spilled blood fills a trough-style urinal, melts ice, bone matter, and flesh catch in the drain. Los Angeles has terrific traffic, and sitting for long periods of time in confined spaces with loved ones brings a sense of fellowship. In the ethmoid bone of a Shiraz moose's skull, milkweed blooms, the skull providing refuge for insects and mice, only small things. The freckles on your shoulders gather and multiply during the summer months. Your calves and the back of your thighs darken, but your belly remains pale. Distraught coveralls sing of huesos, bones, orphans, huérfanos. Enemies have spoken of cutting throats or staging hangings, but are so consumed with plotting they've neglected to notice that most of us have been done off by our loved ones or car accidents. My hearing has failed me, as has my vision, so when you explain yourself, do me the favor of pressing my fingers to your lips. Let me hold my palm at your throat as you speak. There's no body that is not a sermon, or there's no body that is a sermon, or each body might be a hymn, a lesson, an agent of change, an institution, or each body discipline, punishment, an economy, a host, a guest, a loss. But no, there's no body that is not a phantom, a trail nestled behind the falls, no body that is not the falls themselves.
Patrick Holian, reading one of his poems. Both of you seem to mention place, home, that you explore that in some of your works. And I'm sure some people notice that you use Spanish words in both of the pieces that you chose. I think, Lee, you have a Cuban background.
My father's from Cuba.
Mm-hmm. And your father, Patrick's from Mexico.
Yes, from Guadalajara.
Yeah. And what you mentioned, Lee, that the genres, small, what we think of as smaller genres, have become more and more accepted. Uh-huh. And yesterday I just interviewed the new French language poet laureate of Louisiana. So, you know, it using different languages, using different cultures in writing, it's much more possible now. And that's a very good thing, especially with young writers like yourself, making it seem just much more commonplace. Now, using a different kind of language and joining us by phone, Zach Gottschall, who will be joining this trio to read next week. Zach, you are a filmmaker, a screenwriter. You teach that. And as I said earlier, some of us, when we see films, we think they're just born out of images. but there is writing that goes on behind it, and not just the dialogue. You are working, and to go along with home and absence of home, you're working on a film about a homeless man. Tell us just a bit about that film, and we'll talk more about your writing.
Sure. I'm working on a film right now that is in the very early stages. Very little filming has been done. So I am approaching it, you know, conceptually and thinking about storytelling and writing, but it is a documentary. about a man that I've known for about 7 or 8 years, and I guess about 4 years ago he became homeless, and in that past few years he and I have been in touch quite a bit, and I've been one of his few lifelines to the, you know, whenever he gets himself into some kind of trouble, which will be he kind of goes from living on the streets to living in a group homes to behavioral hospitals, back to group homes, and then back to the streets, and it's just this one thing after another. And through being in touch with him, it just kind of, I got insight into something that has always been something that, you know, struck me, which is, you know, someone that doesn't have a house over their head. I mean, that's always been something that I was fascinated with. In fact, I discovered something that I wrote back in high school about different homeless people that I had met. And so I guess this is a kind of story, kind of person that's always been in my imagination somehow. But meeting this particular man and being in touch with him, like I said, just showed me what those actual experiences are like, you know, rather than just kind of, you know, seeing somebody, you know, living under a bridge or something like that. When I got to see this, and the thing that made me really want to tell the story was how much of a no way out kind of situation it is. And, you know, that may sound bleak, but it's almost 100% reality for him. And so what I've been doing over the past couple of years is just meeting with him and getting his, basically doing like a oral history with him, just in a notebook and a recorder, and collected, I don't know, several notebooks of stories from his past experiences. You know, he suffers from bipolar and schizoaffective disorders, and so medication is a big part of his struggle, getting the right medication, staying on it. When you live on the streets, that's kind of hard. So anyway, the thing that was also really attractive is this is one of the funniest people I know. He's incredibly funny, very humorous, and weirdly, very upbeat about life. He's actually taught me a lot about, how to cope with struggles and pain and that kind of stuff. And so something about this kind of dire situation that I first described, but yet in with this perspective that this particular man has, that seems to not just be resilient, but somehow, you know, hopeful. And that, in the process of, I don't know, doing all these, you know, kind of journaling entries with him, I started just writing, you know, about it. Because I didn't know if it could be a film. I recently got a grant to make a film about it, so now I've got to figure out how to turn it into a movie.
It's not just going to be a journal. But, you know, there right. is a tradition of filmmakers, directors, publishing, and especially since it's so easy on the web now, to publish director's notes. And I'm thinking in particular of like Guy Maddin, who does some amazing stuff in his blogs and online journaling. And so there is a lot of creative writing that can go along with being a filmmaker. So you're describing something where you're not just jotting notes of what he does daily, but you are writing something about your relationship with him and musing on that relationship.
Right. And it's somebody that I've known, the way we met was he auditioned for a film. And it was a short film that was sort of like a student project with some students. And he auditioned and gave him the part. And then from there, just kind of, like I said, stayed in touch with him. And, mm-hmm. and you know, he's actually a pretty good actor. He's funny. You know, he's just had a rough go. He's 50, I think he's 50 years old now. Mm-hmm. So the past few years he's been homeless. Writing about it is something I definitely want to do.
Because mm-hmm. so. You did mention you weren't quite sure if it would be able to be turned into a film, if it could be funded. So you obviously, it didn't stop you, and you were pursuing it in writing. Do you have a little something that you could read for us?
Well, I don't have anything that I feel comfortable reading
mm-hmm,
right now.
Mm-hmm. But you will by Tuesday.
I've got several things that I've been kind of working with, and mm-hmm. I would like to read something that will sort of give me a chance to actually think through part of this story. I mean, a big part of it is that in all of his travels, he's been in touch with two people, me and his dad. And so there's kind of like this little triangle there that I'm kind of working with. Mm-hmm. Which is, and I've recently met his father, and we've been in touch. And so that's what I'll be writing about, is about okay. this relationship that I've mm-hmm. had with Thomas and his relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm. If you are just tuning in, we're speaking right now with Zach Gottschall from Baton Rouge. He's joining us by telephone. He is part of a trio of young writers who will be reading together this coming week. We have so much talent in our community, and as you've been hearing, they don't just use one form, poetry, short stories, screenwriting, whatever. They're very comfortable using so many different genres. And just again, a reminder, with us in the studio, Lee Camacho Rooks and Patrick Holian, again, both receiving their doctorates here at UL Lafayette in the Creative Writing Program, and Zach Gottschall, who's been making films for a number of years in Louisiana and a very skilled filmmaker. And you've done mostly documentary, but you've done a narrative film as well, I believe.
I have. Started off was making narrative films, mm-hmm, actors, mm-hmm. and turns out the films that I've made have all in some way or shape been in, including, I guess what you would say, either full-on like nonfiction pieces or documentary pieces, or at least documentary styles. And that's something that came about late, you know, is I grew up and wanted to make movies, you know, mm-hmm, these mm-hmm. big dramatic pieces. And at some point I got called on to documentaries, and I realized that there's just so much, you know, so much to do there creatively that is in a way at times I feel more freedom in that genre than
so many stories to be told.
Well, story. Oh, yeah.
Do you find that writing has helped you as a filmmaker? But what effect does writing have on your ability as a filmmaker?
Well, you know, for example, if I'm writing, a screenplay, I mean, that it focuses, the screenplay is much focused on, you know, not just the character and dialogue and that kind of thing, but actual images that contribute to the story. You know, I do think like a storyteller is the first way that I usually mm-hmm. think about things. Mm-hmm. But for making a film, definitely thinking about telling a story
right.
with images and characters. And even with the documentary, kind of approach that is taking all of these kind of fictional techniques that I get in screenwriting and then trying to make a documentary that has those dramatic elements in it, you know, without trying to impose a particular, without trying to impose a drama where it doesn't exist, but actually, you know, that can come through just the way that interact with the subject of a documentary, you know, encouraging them to tell their stories, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of treating like, you know, sometimes like a, you know, knowing about writing and storytelling whenever I meet someone for a subject of a documentary, I can kind of glean a story, get them to tell their story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find that just so interesting to talk about, again, adaptations between writing and film and crossing very different forms of storytelling. And I think just from what you've said, people who attend the reading may have a lot of questions for you about filmmaking, because that's of interest to a lot of people. And as you were talking, I think I would like to ask Lee and Patrick also, what effect visual media has on your writing, if any? I mean, in the two pieces that you read, people could hear very specific details, very sensual details, which come from your own observations. But as young writers, you are surrounded by visual images in media every day. Do you find that that affects you, films and things you see on screen, Lee?
Oh, absolutely. I think that Patrick and I have in common our love of art. My sister is an artist. She owns a place in town. I come from very artistic people. I can't get my hands to do necessarily what I want them to do with visual art. And I think that's one reason I turn to writing, is because I can create the pictures, the images that I want through words.
But the visual has an impact on those words.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I like to, when I'm feeling stuck, I like to go outdoors. I spend a lot of my life outdoors. I bring my camera. I'm not a great photographer, but photography has taught me a lot about writing, ideas about focus, and even like focal length and things like that I take into my writing when I think about how to present information, where a scene should end, things like that. And another thing I do is go to local galleries and just sort of sit and look at images, or go to websites. The Smithsonian has these amazing, images. And sometimes for my flash work, sometimes for my poetry, but even, in my novels, when I need to go to Sippermore Point, for example, in one of my novels, I have a painting on my wall that is of Sippermore Point. So,
but you're right, the ekphrastic writer has a lot more resources these days. I mean, it's everywhere online.
It is.
You can find all of these images.
Yeah,
it's such a resource.
And I'm a big movie fan. So I was watching The Shape of Water a couple of weeks ago, and I was just floored by the use of light in it. And it was like, oh, I want to work on this in my writing. So even just techniques and stuff.
Wow. Cross inspiration and cross genres. Patrick, are you influenced by film or moving images?
Influenced by film a great deal, by art. Mm-hmm. I think, when I talk about dislocation, I write a great deal about San Francisco. And I think writing about place when you're not immersed in that place forces you to view it from another angle. But we do have, we have, for better or worse, we have the technology that allows us to literally see the spaces that we're writing about. But, when I go back home, I do make a concerted effort to go to as many art galleries and museums, go on hikes. I used to run a great deal through San Francisco, through Golden Gate Park, through Land's End, through a lot of the state parks. And that's pretty vital to me. And I think any way that you can, these different avenues you can find into a narrative, I think you should try to take advantage of them. And, Zach was talking about blending documentary and fictional strategies in his films. And in a recent novella, I wrote a great deal about things like aphasia. And what happens to the brain after traumatic brain injuries or strokes. I talk about the anatomy of the human jaw, or butterflies and moths.
So that interfaces with your fiction.
Right. And I think historically there's a precedent for texts that employ photographs or drawings. And I think there are many, many examples of people incorporating, what's qualifies as true in fictional works.
Well, again, I want to let people know who are finding themselves just really drawn to what you all are saying, that they have an opportunity to hear you read here in Lafayette. My guests are by telephone Zach Gottschall, young filmmaker. He's working on a documentary about a homeless man and has been writing a lot about that relationship, not only with him, but the man's father. And he will be reading from those musings next week on Tuesday at Alexander Books with the two of you, Lee Camacho Rooks and Patrick Holian, who are both writers exploring so many different genres, so many different ideas, types of writing. They will be reading from, I guess, a variety of your work. Patrick has written short stories, a novella, poetry. Lee has a collection of short stories coming out and maybe reading from some of those as well. Another thing that this university does well is it prepares you to present your work to the public. I know the graduate students have a weekly reading series, and you all try to read to the public in as many opportunities as you can. So that's a great service the university does, and I'm glad that people will have an opportunity to hear all of you. So, and a nice opportunity, too, to hear young people working in different areas, Zach working in film, the two of you working you know, in different cultures, different genres. So that will be next week on Tuesday. People can hear you at Alexander Books, May 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. That's Tuesday, May 22nd. So just a great opportunity to see what's happening in our community, what we're doing here at the university. And also, Zach, I think if people are interested in finding out more about your film, I think you have a website.
Right now the website is under construction.
Okay, well, they'll have to come hear you read then.
Yeah, there's a few things that are searchable.
Okay, all right. Just if they're curious about some of your imagery. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for taking the time to come and talk with us here people know
thank
about
you
your writing.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. Again, Drs. Lee Camacho Rooks, Patrick Holian, and Zach Gottschall by telephone. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.